Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Is doing. Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PML.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. So, we're going team by team.
I would be very careful about slinging stuff.
Am I going to get sued?
We got legal on this?
Let's send you out on the right note. PFF sucks. Have a great day, everybody.
All right, welcome into the day three, day four, day whatever it is, Thursday in Indianapolis for the Scouting Combine. We're going to talk about all the news that's been happening on the podiums and indeed out in the wider ether. Sam Monson here as usual, and joining me today is Max Chadwick, college football analyst at PFF and host of Preferred Walk-On. How's it going, Max?
Dude, this is the first time on the PFF NFL pod right now. I've been watching you guys for years. This is kind of a really cool moment for you right now.
And we're Thursday, so content, guys. We're 4 days into this whole Indianapolis trip, and your voice sounds fine. I don't understand what's happening.
I am battling right now, Sam. I've been battling for a few days now. I mean, you've been doing this for years now, but I don't know how you've done it for this long.
Well, you've got youth on your side, so that's helping. But I would at least appreciate it if you sounded a little more rough so that we could all, you know, all...
My voice just recovered. My voice has been gone for the last couple days. This actually is perfect timing, because if you asked me to do the show yesterday, I probably would not have been able to do it.
So we all need to revel in the misery together and get through this, because that's the only way it's going to happen. Right. So, big thing today, defensive backs were on the podiums. Mm-hmm. They were out there saying all kinds of crazy stuff. So I'm curious what your big takeaways were from the DB group.
Did you see Tyler Owens, the Texas Tech safety? Someone asked him, they're like, what do you think about like the moon landing and all that? He's like, dude, I don't think space is real.
I did hear that. I heard specifically the comment of, I don't think space is real. And at that point in the morning, I just couldn't deal with that conversation.
You went back to the Airbnb.
Well, because I had questions, right? I'm like... Do you mean space, or like space, you know, conceptually? I couldn't engage with that conversation at that point in the morning, so I couldn't deal with that. But I heard that, and then I heard Kalen King doesn't believe in the moon landings.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, what is happening?
Someone asked him if he could fight a baby ostrich, and he was like, dude, that baby ostrich, I would dominate that baby ostrich. Yeah. So at least he's got the confidence in himself, and you want to see that in a top cornerback prospect. But yeah, there's a lot of people out here that don't believe in the moon landing, don't believe in space, the planets, anything, man.
Unless, of course, the baby ostrich ran a double move, in which case, problem.
Stop. I love Kalen King. I do love him. As a Penn State fan, I do love him. But yeah, that Ohio State game this year was rough.
There used to be a theory out there. I don't know if it's like gone, you know, the way of the dinosaurs and all that kind of stuff. But there was a theory at one point that you want defensive backs to be dumb, right? Like the stupider they are, the better, because you don't want them thinking during games.
I should have played DB then.
Reading and reacting and not having to think about what's going on, right? If that is still a case, like if there are teams out there that think that's true, they're going to love this class based off what we've been hearing at the podiums.
Tyler Owens will be a first round pick now. He's going to run a 4.2. Honestly, I think he's like 210 pounds. He's going to be a freak. But yeah, that podium today was an all time.
Did anybody?
Sure.
So did people explore beyond that, or did we just go, okay, cool?
No, I think they just asked him that, and then the next question was like, hey, have you met with the Browns yet? And he was like, no, I met with the Browns.
Right? We're at the podium. We've got a gaggle of people, right? The first interesting thing of the week has been said. Some guy has declared out there, I don't really believe in space, right? That begs some follow-up questions. Yep. And instead, some jackass is like, hey, have you met with my team this week?
Yep.
Don't care. Shut up. We need to follow up question here. I have questions about space.
One that I kind of maybe believe in. Someone asked, you know, do you think pigeons are real? And the guy was like, no, I don't think they're real. He's like, I think it's like government.
What do you mean robots? You don't think they're real?
Have you? Someone said, have you ever seen a baby pigeon? And he was like, I've never seen a baby pigeon before in my life.
Okay.
So we were breaking new ground today here at the NFL Combine. Very little football is actually talked, but I learned a lot today. Is what I'm saying.
I mean, I like the conversations. I just feel like we can't allow things like that to go said without being explored further. Like, I need more. We need more conversation. If you don't believe in a pigeon as a thing, right?
I'm
open
to that.
We need to talk about that.
I'm open to that conspiracy theory. The space thing is ridiculous. This pigeons thing, like, they are making some good points up there.
I just think, like, either way, we need to explore the topic further. We can't just move on to have you met the Bears this week, right?
Informal, informal, yeah.
Yeah, we need to dive into that further, and maybe we need to dedicate a whole interview session to that, right? Like, if the Indianapolis Colts are meeting this guy, 15 minutes is going to be spent on walk me through this pigeon thing because that's craziness.
I can't wait tomorrow. So Caleb Williams' podium is tomorrow. I want to be the guy to ask him, hey, have you met with the Bears yet?
No, you need to ask him, does he believe in space or pigeons little baby cats or whatever it is?
Yep.
God.
Yeah, that was it. But otherwise, Nate Wiggins, I think, had the quote of the day. He said a coach came up to him and was like, hey, what are you thinking in the 40? You're going to run like a 4.5? And he's like, and I laughed in his face. He's like, I'm running a 4.2, dude. So that guy brought the energy. I think Nate Wiggins is going to have an unbelievable combine. But yeah, that was a quote I think that everyone loved today.
So he said he had run a 4.27 in practice, right? And immediately, was it Prize Picks, took down his prop for the 40 because they had it like 4.5 something.
Yeah.
And they're like, uh-oh, we might have got that wrong. Mm-hmm. To the tune of 0.3 seconds. So let's get rid of that.
I don't understand how you place that wager on it already being 4.55. But he was like, you've seen the PFF draft guide, he's like the most athletic corner we have in this class right now. Like, he's going to run at least a 4.3.
That would be huge for him. Like, because he's big. He's 6'2 or whatever, 180-ish pounds, mm-hmm. right? I think there's size, the frame, to get bigger than that. Like, he's not in this Emmanuel Forbes, Cameron Dantzler world right. where you're like, that dude's 160 and he's not getting any bigger. Yep. Like, he's 180 pounds-ish, and I think he can get bigger than that.
He can.
Get towards 200. If he's able to run 4.27 or 4.3 flat at that kind of size, that's huge for him.
And it's a wide open corner class. Yeah. I've talked to a lot of people in media, and everyone's had a different cornerback one right now, honestly. So
he was mine.
Really?
Yeah.
He is number one?
I need to go back and sort of do like the final run in all these corners, but he was CB1 for me on first viewing.
I mean, he's probably got the highest ceiling, right?
Yeah.
Out of all these guys. So I think that's a big thing for this this whole thing. I think guys like Cooper DeJean, who he had a great podium today, honestly, too. But guys like him, like, he kind of fits only kind of one style of defense, like a heavy zone coverage defense, off coverage. Nate Wiggins, if you're looking for a press man corner, like, he might be the guy for this draft.
Right. Yeah, talk to me about Cooper DeJean, because you said he had a good podium. One of the things he said, it was sort of, he's willing to play anywhere, right? Because mm-hmm. obviously he's getting questions about moving to safety, all that kind of thing. As someone who's watched him in college, are the questions about him moving to safety simply because he's a white corner, right? Is that what we're doing here? Or are there actually reasons why he should be being talked about as getting moved to safety?
I think he's capable of playing safety. But the thing is, I looked it up today, actually, he's played one snap at safety his entire career. He's played 63 snaps on the defensive line. So I think that Cooper DeJean deserves a shot at outside corner to begin with, and he's shown that he could do it at a high level. I don't think this is a guy that needs to convert to safety. Can he do it? He probably can, but I think he's a guy that at least deserves a chance to fail at outside corner before you even move him there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he could do it simply because he's big, fast, he's a good athlete.
Right.
Like, he fits the billing as a good safety, but I mean, those are all things that make you a good corner as well.
Yes.
Like, if you can hold up a corner, there's no reason you would move a guy like that to safety without that kind of failure.
And I think another thing, too, that makes me think he could be a good safety, he's an awesome run defender. I think he's probably the best run defending corner that we have in this draft right now. So if you move him to safety, that'll obviously be an even bigger part of his game. But yeah, I think he, for me right now, I think he deserves to be an outside corner, get a shot there. He's proven that he's been an elite player there for 2 years. So
the last guy we want to talk about in the DB room before we move on to some other topics is Kool-Aid McKinstry.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously one of the coolest names in the draft,
yep.
Judged by many, but was a guy that I think a lot of people said was cornerback one in this draft, certainly through the season. And then the further we got into the process, the more that seemed to die away, and now he might not even be the first cornerback from his own college coming into this draft class. You, though, I'm led to believe, love Kool-Aid McKinstry.
I love him. I think he still should be in the conversation for CB1. I know you disagree with me on that, but I think this week is huge for him. The big question for him is obviously speed, change of direction, which we can see here at the combine. If he tests well there, I think he's going to move back up the boards. I mean, he's been locked down corner. He's the only reason why Terrion Arnold is where he is right now, because they ignored his side of the field the entire season. I think he had like 30 targets all year. So I think Kool-Aid is honestly being slept on right now. I think he's been one of the best corners in college football for 2+ years now. I still think this guy is worthy of being a top 20-15 pick, honestly.
And I think he probably will test well. Like, I think that's actually a strength. If you just lock him into being fast, change of direction, like the athleticism stuff, I think he's actually really good at that. Mm-hmm. My issues with his tape are all the sort of reading and reacting element to it. Like, I think he feels like – I felt a little bit about
– Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This way for a couple of corners last year, that he just seems to read it a tick late relative to other people. And the contrast last year was with a guy like Devin Witherspoon, who read it early, right? He was always ahead of the play. He read it before everybody else in the field, and he was already moving to the spot, you know, way before the play was even developing. And then you get corners on the other side of it where every single play, they just seem a tick late to see it and to read it. And Kool-Aid was like that as well. I think there's some times where he gets it right and he's really good. Like the best thing he does to me is he's really well able to just glide with a guy in phase.
Yep.
You know, once there's nothing kind of weird happening on the play, it's just we're turning and running, right?
Yeah.
Like the classic cornerback play. We're just going to bump and run down the field. He's really good at that. But he's too easy to turn around and just sort of head fake away and get him moving in the wrong direction. And he's a little bit late to read anything in zone as well. And given that most teams are playing zone most of the time, it's a little bit of a worry.
Now, I think that's a fair point for sure. But I think the thing that I still go back to with him, and it's a lot like the other corner was an awesome name, Sauce Gardner, was that his teammate Kobe Bryant was able to shine because they threw at him every play.
Right.
Terron Arnold was able to shine because Kool-Aid didn't look at Kool-Aid's way the entire time. So I'm not comparing him to Sauce Gardner. I don't think he's even close to the prospect that Sauce was coming out. But I do think that Kool-Aid is still being slept on in this cornerback class. I do think he's part of that conversation for CB1.
Yeah, and it's also... So coming from a great program like Alabama makes it more difficult to make the argument that, hey, you get them to the NFL, you coach him up, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's already pretty well coached up, so that's a bit of a concern. But there's no reason you can't necessarily work on those things and improve his ability to read and see things quicker and get him on that page. One of my notes for him, though, was, you know, recovery speed and angles and all those kinds of things are good. He just needs to actually use them way more than you would want to see. Like, ideally, you don't get yourself out of position to have to use the
recovery
speed.
He gets grabby, too. He gets a little grabby sometimes,
right,
too.
I think that's generally that's quite a common trait in college corners anyway. Like, a lot of those guys are super physical, in part because you can be, right?
Yep.
There's not the 5-yard chuck zone. You can keep going. So a lot of those guys are, like, way more physically aggressive than they're allowed to be, essentially, in the NFL.
So how would you rank the top corners in this year's draft right now? So you said Wiggins number one, right?
Wiggins was my number one. I need to go through and do a second run and sort of see all these guys again and to sort of put them in a final order. But Wiggins was my number one guy. I'm really interested in Arnold. I haven't watched enough of him yet. And Mitchell is the other guy. But I was lower on Kool-Aid than a lot of people, and I was lower on Cooper DeJean.
Interesting.
Certainly Trev.
And I think the three guys you just mentioned right there, Wiggins, I think Arnold's going to test really well, and I think Quinyon Mitchell's going to test really well. So those three, I think, can really...
And he was spectacular at the Senior Bowl.
Oh, my God. That was the big thing, was that he never played press coverage at Toledo.
Right.
So we all had questions about that. And then he goes to the Senior Bowl and is locked down in press coverage. So I think he's answered all those questions. He's probably had the best pre-draft process so far of any corner.
Yeah. So if you've got a family like I do, then you need to get them term life insurance policy to protect them. It's one of the smartest financial decisions you can make. And the start of the new year, and the start of the new year being February the 29th, is the perfect time to get it done. So you can focus on whatever else the new year has in store for you. Fabric was designed by parents for parents to help you get a high quality, surprisingly affordable term life insurance policy in less than 10 minutes. Fabric has flexible policies that fit your family and your budget, with quality policies like $1 million in coverage for less than $1 a day. Get your personalized quote in minutes and then apply when it's convenient for you. It's all online and on your schedule. You could go from start to covered in less than 10 minutes with no health exam required. Join the thousands of parents who trust Fabric to protect their family. Apply today in minutes at meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. That's meetfabric.com/PFFNFL. M-E-E-T. Fabric.com/PFFNFL. Policies issued by Western Southern Life Insurance Company, not available in certain states. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. All right, I want to pivot to from one of the smallest positions on the field to one of the largest humans you're ever going to see. Texas defensive tackle Devondre Sweat weighed in today at 366 pounds. And this was seen as a good sign because it was the exact same weight as he played in college,
yes.
Right? Jordan Davis, for some perspective, weighed in at the combine at 340 and is one of the largest humans in the NFL.
Yep.
So we are talking about somebody that's weighing in at the combine at the same time, 26 pounds heavier than Jordan Davis.
So I looked it up. So since, I think, 1999, when they started doing these measurements, he is the second heaviest defensive lineman we've ever seen at the combine. The only one heavier was T.J. Barnes at 369. So only 3 pounds heavier than Devondre Sweat. Now, Devondre Sweat, for all intents and purposes, was the best defensive tackle in college football this year. As a prospect, his teammate's better than him. I think Johnny Newton's better than him. Because I don't think he's as great of a pass rusher. But you see that weight show up in the run. He eats double teams for lunch, dude. Every single time. I think he's the best run defending defensive tackle probably in this draft.
So what can he be in the NFL? Because when you get up to that kind of size, the general assumption is you can't be a three-down player, you can't impact the pass game as much, and you're therefore radically limited in what you could be. Now, I think even that limited thing is becoming more and more important. Like, teams are actually realizing those guys that can eat double teams, that can plug two gaps, mm-hmm. that even if they're only doing it on two downs, that's valuable because that's going to get you to third down, and that's when you put the fast guy on the field and make the impact. Like, I think we went away from seeing value in those guys for a while, and we're kind of coming back in the cycle and realizing that actually if you have somebody that can do that, it's still really valuable. But is he capped at that size as you're just going to be this limited run-stuffing, two-down type of player, or can he, you know, expand his role into more things?
I don't think he got enough credit for being a pass rusher at Texas like he deserved. Now, Byron Murphy was the best pass rushing defensive tackle in college football, but I think Devondre Sweat held up. I even think he held up more than Jordan Davis did at Georgia as a pass rusher. So if Jordan Davis go, I mean, I don't think he should be a first round pick, don't get me wrong, but Jordan Davis, after the stellar combine he had, went in the first round. Like you said, there are teams that need these guys to plug holes in the run game, to eat double teams. Devondre Sweat is that guy, and there's no one else in this class that I think does it at nearly the level that he does.
And there are players now that, I mean, Dexter Lawrence is now the poster child, right? Mm-hmm. 6'4", 342 pounds listed in the NFL, and Dexter Lawrence has become one of the better pass rushers in the NFL from a nose tackle alignment, right? He's the guy now that's showing you can still do that. You mm-hmm. can still be an impact playmaker as a pass rusher at 340 plus pounds if you're good enough to get it done. And now look, there's one Dexter Lawrence. Nobody else is even in the same ballpark in terms of being able to impact the pass game, certainly from the nose tackle spot. But like, if you're Devondre Sweat's camp, or if you're a team talking yourself into him, and you want him to be more than just a 300-snap guy that plays the run, like, that's what you're trying to chase, right? Somebody that can be Dexter Lawrence, who can use his size, but also be quick enough and violent enough to just chuck an offensive lineman out of his way and rush the passer on third downs.
Yeah, he had so Sweat had a 15% pass rush win rate this past year. That's pretty in the good. 95th percentile for our system. So
it's way lower than edge rushers, but those guys have higher pass rush win rates. For an interior player, that's a pretty good number.
And again, like, I think it's just he's a victim of playing next to Byron Murphy, where you look at Byron Murphy like, oh, that's
right.
What you
I mean,
want.
They're different players, right?
Exactly.
Like, even Dexter Lawrence relative to Aaron Donald, right?
Right.
They're different types of pass rushers. Like, mm-hmm. they're not. Dexter Lawrence is never likely to have the same volume or impact of pass rush as an Aaron Donald, as a Chris Jones, as these guys that do play as a three tech or even out wide. He's an interior type of player, but he's now the gold standard at that. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what Sweat needs to be.
Now, do you think 366, is that too heavy? Does he have to go down, do you think? Or do you think that's the way you can just play it?
I think, honestly, to me, the limiting factor is not, it's not necessarily, it's how many snaps can you play at that size? Like, that's the problem, right? That was the question with Jordan Davis. Mm-hmm. Jordan Davis was 340 at the combine, and the assumption was he was going to weigh more than that during games.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't know what his actual playing weight is, but let's assume it's more than 340. And because Georgia had this heavy rotation on the defensive line, they got so many guys, like, he never had to play more than 350 snaps mm-hmm. in college. And in the NFL, you're going to have to play more than that if you want to be an impact playmaker. And Davis has played more than that, but he still hasn't shown yet that he can be, you know, the consistent game wrecker at that size, playing that volume of snaps. So that, to me, is the question for Sweat. It's not, you know, what can you do in a couple of plays here or there.
Right.
It's if you're going to be 366, mm-hmm. how many snaps are you going to be able to play at a high level in a game?
And he played 550 this year and was the highest graded defensive tackle in the country. So I think he can do it. The weight was a little alarming to me a little bit. But again, I mean, if he was that dominant at that weight this past year, I mean, I don't really see any reason why he would need to drop 10, 15 pounds, like some people are saying. Like, if he's that good in college, like, again, like his Cooper DeJean, like, let him fail at it before you change anything.
Like, Vita Vea is another guy that would be sort of put up as potentially something of a goal for him, right? Vita Vea is, like, 350
yep.
and huge, and he played 700 snaps this year, essentially. Most of them were pass-rushing snaps mm-hmm. just because of the nature of the Bucs' defense. But that, you know, you can play a lot of snaps at that size and still be an impact player. Now, we've said a lot on this show, like, Vita Vea is inconsistent. He's kind of frustrating because he doesn't always make that impact. I don't know if that is a, you know, a size and a durability and a conditioning, a stamina type of issue, or if he's simply an inconsistent player. But, you know, that's the question. It's not like, can you function at that size?
Yeah.
It's how long can you function for at that size?
Yeah, and listen, Trevor has Tavondre Sweat number 90 on the big board, so we're talking like a third-round player
right.
here. Like, I mean, I think that's the day two conversation that we can see for Tavondre Sweat, but like we mentioned before, I mean, like, he fits a role that so many teams in the NFL need now that not a lot of guys can do. I think this is a guy you're still taking day two, and you're pretty happy about it, honestly.
And he's such a, like, he's fascinating to talk about because he is a singularly unique human.
Yep.
Like, there's the planet theory, the Bill Parcells idea. Like, there's one of those guys walking around. Like
yep.
you said, the second heaviest player that's ever weighed in at the, mm-hmm. on the defensive line. Like, there are not players that walk around at that size. So the reason he gets a disproportionate amount of, like, attention is, mm-hmm. like, if you want something that looks like that, you know, if you think you're finding the next Dexter Lawrence, the next Vita Vea, there's one,
yeah.
right? That's the one guy you're targeting. Whether you're targeting him in the second, third, fourth round, whatever, you have one shot at it.
Dude, that's why the whole Tyler Owens not believing in space or planets thing. It's like, dude, I don't know if you've seen Tavondre Sweat, man. Because that guy, when he's on the field, is a planet unto himself. Like, he's eating that entire nice. Interior offensive line, honestly.
Nice, nice. One other thing I wanted to talk about, Darius Robinson was talking yesterday. And one of the things he said, or one of the things he was sort of talking about, was how just pumped, hyped he was to meet with the Lions, right? Because he grew up 20 minutes from the Detroit Lions. Mm-hmm. He is a Lions fan. His mother posted a picture somewhere on social media of him, you know, getting an autograph at Lions training
Love
camp
that.
Or whatever it was, right? I'm curious. Detroit picks, you know, low in the first round, 28, right? Is mm-hmm. that where they pick? They still need defensive line help. You know, Aiden Hutchinson has panned out great.
Yep.
But are they a live candidate at this point to get two sort of local, homegrown,
Ooh.
Massive Lions fans in the last 3 years? Aiden, this was one of the Aiden Hutchinson narratives, right?
Yep.
He was a huge Detroit fan, a Michigan guy, a homegrown guy, and the Lions snagged him with the second overall pick because Jacksonville went crazy and grabbed Trayvon Walker. Could they do it again with Darius Robinson?
I kind of love that, with one, because he's a Lions fan, and also they need help at edge.
Yep.
They need help on the interior D-line, and Robinson played on the interior D-line. Was played at a high level for Missouri before moving to edge this past year. He's a massive edge fan. It's like 295, I think, is what he listed at. Yeah, that could fit almost two needs for them, because, like I said, they need help all over that defensive line, and Robinson is rising. Will he be there at 29? I don't know, because
right.
of the way he's going to test out really well, too. But I do think that'd be a pick that I think Detroit fans should be pretty excited about if that happens.
All right, a couple of more measurables to come from the edge rusher group, I think, that are interesting. Dallas Turner showed up with a 6'11" wingspan, which, frankly, couldn't be more perfect for a guy that wants to use a long arm move at, like, every
yeah.
possible
yep.
opportunity. So I think that was pretty interesting. Chop Robinson came in with 32.5-inch arms. Laiatu Latu was 32.58.
Ooh,
so an extra eighth longer than Chop Robinson. But those are two guys now that are sort of relatively short arms for a pass rusher, which obviously the NFL doesn't love.
No, it doesn't love that. But yeah, the Dallas Turner thing, like, I heard someone say, like, he tie his shoes standing up and all. Like, he looks insane, man. I think Dallas Turner is going to also test out really well. Chop is good. My prediction for the combine this week, Chop is going to win the combine. The numbers,
I mean,
he said
he wants to run 4.4 flat.
4.4 flat, which is like Micah Parsons.
He 250 something.
250 something. And he wants to jump 40 inches in the vertical and 11 feet in the broad. And someone asked him, like, okay, do you want to do that? And he's like, no, I've done that before.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's hit those numbers in practice. What are you saying?
So I think he's going to have a great combine. You mentioned it, though, that the arm length is a question mark. It's the thing with Latu too. And I think Latu's testing is going to be huge, too, because that's kind of the question with him, is whether or not he's a freak athlete. I love Latu. Again, it's like the cornerback class. There's a different edge one no matter who you talk to right now. And I think Dallas Turner and Chop could really establish themselves in that conversation. But guys like Laiatu Latu, they need, not only do they need a big workout, they need to do really well in the medical portion as well. And hopefully he checks out in that aspect.
Yeah, the medical is everything, I think, for Latu. I don't imagine he's going to test particularly well, but I don't think that will surprise anybody if it's true. Like, to him, for him, so Chop Robinson is trying to win the combine, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to run 4.4 flat. He's trying to jump out of the gym, all these kinds of things. He weighed 254, by the way. So if he's able to run a 4.4 flat at 254,
yeah.
But anyway, he's trying to set like the best numbers in the combine. Latu's trying to just not fail the combine, right? Like he's out there, let me just hit the benchmarks that people want. Like, just don't take me off any boards because I didn't hit numbers that they see as like minimum standards. I think nobody's expecting him to be the great athlete.
No.
His tape is the thing. Like his tape, his technique, his game plan. Like he's by far the most well-rounded edge rusher in terms of the number of ways he can win. So his assignment is different this week. It's just like, just don't flunk the test.
And his tape was the best out of any tape. It's the best we've seen. You know that his 96.3 PFF grade this year, that's the highest we've ever given to a Power 5 player.
And it makes sense. I mean, his tape is absurd.
Yeah. Blake Corum was behind him, and then Kyle Pitts, Quinnen Williams, and Chase Young. And they all went top five in their drafts after their tape. So, yeah, I think Latu, again, like Kool-Aid McKinstry, I think he's being slept on a little bit in this edge class, too.
I learned today for the first time why Chop Robinson is called Chop Robinson. His first name is something that, having seen it written down, I don't know how to say it. It's a string of letters.
Damian.
So it looked a little bit like that, but in a way that doesn't, like, that, you know, I've never seen it written like that. Anyway, so that's his first name. But he was nicknamed Pork Chop because apparently he was a 14-pound baby when he was born. And then he decided, as he grew up and slimmed down, he was no longer, he could no longer live up to the pork part of Chop. So just dropped it and was like, I'm just Chop Robinson now.
There's a lot. This is a great name draft. You got Kool-Aid McKinstry. You got Chop Robinson. I mean, yeah, we were fortunate enough to talk to Chop before the season, and I asked him about that story. And listen, I mean, he came from Maryland. He didn't really get a lot of playing time at Maryland. Came to Penn State, and he's blown up since then. So I know Trevor's a little bit lower on him right now. As a Penn State fan, I don't love that. But I do think Chop Robinson, after this combine, I think he's going to be a lock for the first round, honestly.
He seemed to, his stock seems to have gone down. Like, it's not just Trevor. Like,
no, it's everyone. Yes, a lot of people, yeah.
And yet, I mean, his tape is, he's so explosive, which, you know.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Four flat.
Like, yeah.
He looks like a kind of slightly juiced up version, or slightly more together technique-wise than Byron Young last year.
Yes,
like the Tennessee edge rusher, now with the Rams, who was just like a ball of burst and energy and like madness, but didn't really seem to have any idea what he was doing. Robinson has a little bit of an idea what he's doing, but still has the same like explosiveness, burst, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I think his pass rush plan could still be developed. So the fact that he was grading out 90-plus last 2 years and still can get better, like that's I think he's got one of the highest ceilings out of any of these edge rushers in this draft.
I like him a lot. I'm kind of surprised that everyone's souring on him a little bit. It would be interesting to see if like a crazy combine workout
it'll go back up.
Does shoot him back up the board, at least the perception-wise. All right, let's wrap it up with a kind of general week recap, even though, you know, workouts essentially start today. So in a funny way, the week hasn't even started yet. But, you know, this time a year ago, we had Jalen Carter getting himself into legal trouble. It was all kinds of chaos breaking out at the combine. This has felt like more of a kind of quiet combine, and more of the news and talk has been actually on the NFL side rather than the prospects and all that kind of thing. It's been, you know, Justin Fields news, been Caleb Williams news, it's been L'Jarius Sneed, all that kind of thing. So what do you make of the week so far?
I've had a lot of fun. I'm so excited for tomorrow when these quarterbacks talk. And I mean, you've been going to the combine for years. I mean, do you think we'll ever see a podium as crowded as Caleb Williams that we're going to get tomorrow?
No.
Like, he is going to be surrounded by people tomorrow. I'm excited for that. Marvin Harrison Jr. obviously is going to speak too. I'm really excited about that. But yeah, listen, not a lot of guys are testing, which is unfortunate. But the guys that are, J.J. McCarthy is going to throw. Bo Nix is going to throw, I think. Michael Penix Jr. is throwing. Spencer Rattler is throwing. Like, I'm really excited to see who emerges in that kind of QB4 debate. It's been kind of assumed that J.J. McCarthy is the guy right now. But we'll see after the combine, honestly.
I mean, it's going to be fascinating for, like, even the order of the quarterbacks, I think, is a moving target right now. Like, you're right, J.J. McCarthy is a sort of consensus number four, but I'm sure there are teams that would have him as number three. And the longer it goes, the more it seemed initially it was Caleb Williams and Drake May as a sort of 50-50. You might, you know, could go either way there. The longer we go, it's like it's Caleb Williams one. and it's seeming like more and more people have Jaden Daniels 2, Drake May might be 3. The people that are souring on Drake May, who knows how far they're going to sour on him. Like, maybe McCarthy ends up 3. Drake May's QB4 all of a sudden.
I saw a report that some team had McCarthy QB2 overall, which, I mean, I don't know if I would go that high.
Jim Harbaugh's got him QB1.
It's probably going to trade Justin Herbert and take McCarthy at 5, honestly. How would you rank this 4? I haven't asked you this yet.
I think it's Caleb Williams number 1 by a mile, it's a huge gap. Like, that's my biggest takeaway, honestly, is just the gap between Caleb Williams and everybody else is bigger than people were saying it was.
Agreed.
And I think all the other guys scare me in different ways. Mm-hmm. Like, I do see absolutely why you're scared of Drake May. I also think, though, that's probably going to go too far. Like, he's so talented that... Look, he misses a lot of throws, and he doesn't make a lot of plays that he probably should make, and that's what people are seeing now. That's what's scaring people. But ultimately, like, the talent that he has and the potential he has is still insane. Like, mm-hmm. let's tap the brakes on just how far to drop him down with that, particularly viewing the alternatives. Like, Jaden Daniels reminds me of sort of a taller Tyrod Taylor.
I like that.
Like, he's got incredible ability. His athleticism is nuts. His arm's great. Like, he can make all the throws. On the other hand, he's like suicidal when he's running around, right? And he misses some plays as well. Like, there's some flaws to his game. And he's, you know, older prospect, took him a while, mm-hmm. took him like needing to throw to multiple first round pick wide receivers, like all those kinds of things. And then JJ McCarthy, the thing that stood out on his tape to me is he has an incredible highlight reel of really ridiculously good throws following terrible decisions, like threading the ball, like the Ohio State play where he threads the ball between two guys, terrible decision,
mm-hmm.
great throw. Like, and I don't think that that's an overall positive thing. I think if you're making a sequence of bad decisions, eventually you're going to stop bailing it out with an amazing throw, and you're just going to have a bad decision that's getting picked off.
He needs the Patrick Mahomes, Jordan Love treatment, in my opinion, where it's like, develop him, let him sit for a year, maybe 2 years, and then let him go. I don't know if he's going to get that, because it sounds like he's moving up a lot of boards right now. But so you would have JJ QB4 then?
Probably.
Okay.
I think that probably is the order, is Caleb Williams, a giant gap, and then I'm still kind of flipping a coin between Daniels and Drake May, and then JJ McCarthy would be my number 4.
Okay, that's fair.
All right, taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. And that's why for the last year or so, we have been drinking AG1 every day, no exceptions. And God, do you need it at the Combine during Indianapolis. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day. And it makes you feel stronger, energized, well-nourished, ready to take on the day. And that's because each serving of AG1 delivers your daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit. It's also powerfully simple. Let me find the actual part that I need to read of this. If there's one product I have to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why we've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/PFF. That's drinkag1.com/PFF. All right, Max, I think that's pretty much it for this show. Any closing thoughts before we wrap it up and bounce?
Oh, yeah, Cooley McKittrey, CB1. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's true, but I appreciate your effort. I appreciate your effort on it, and appreciate everybody here for sticking with us throughout the week. We will be back next week, assuming Steve is alive. He's apparently got strep throat now, in addition to recovering from COVID a couple of weeks ago. So if he's alive on Monday, we'll be back. If not, who the hell knows? We'll talk to you then. Thank you all for watching.